Wonder Podcast, the podcast where we review and critique and break down films all in one big long take. I'm Austin Archer, and with me, as always, is my childhood next door neighbor and lifelong best friend,
Kramer England.
Okay, here we are. We did Gladiator last week, and now we're doing Gladiator 2, a legacy sequel, 25 years in the making. Yes.
Or if you're going to pronounce it like they did in the movie, in the title of the movie, Gladiator.
Glad-2-ator.
Yeah, Glad-2-ator.
Glad-2-ator.
Glad-2-ator, yep.
Okay, we're doing a double header tonight. We just did Wicked, and we didn't tell each other what we thought of Wicked before we started. Same thing with this one. We didn't tell each other what we thought.
I want to bet that we feel the same way.
Do you think?
I think we're going to feel the same.
I think so too. I've got a feeling.
I mean, we felt the exact same way about Wicked, so I feel like we're going to feel the same way about this one too.
I will say this.
Yes.
I was very encouraged by all of the positive reviews coming in for this film.
Yes.
And I wanted so badly to enjoy that. I was rooting for this movie, and I was doing everything I could to lean in and be like, just let it, just.
Yeah.
And I don't like Gladiator 2. I think it's bad.
Okay, then maybe we don't feel the same.
Okay, what did you think?
I did not love it.
Yeah.
I felt the same as you. Like, I was really wanting to love this movie. I knew it would not be as good as the first one.
Yeah.
Like, I knew it would not. Yeah. But I was expecting to like it more than I did. I have to... thinking about it more, like right when I left the theater, I was like, well, it wasn't that great. Like it was, but as I thought about it more, I was like, okay, that actually makes some sense. It's not a great film, but there was a lot that I was entertained with for
absolutely.
But
are you not entertained?
Exactly. Yep. But there was some stuff that didn't have that feeling like Gladiator did. Biggest thing that I have a problem with is the score.
The score
is not Hans Zimmer.
Oh,
the score in the first movie is very present. It is like it is pushing you on how to feel. This is how you should feel. This moment is intense. And this is Hans Zimmer at his best.
What a letdown.
It really was. And this one was like the only time I actually heard the score was when they were doing Hans Zimmer themes like to reiterate with the character. I was like, oh, there it is. And then other times it was just very, very absent. And I don't like that trend. Listen, if you have a score, we're watching a movie. I want to hear the score. I want you to tell me how I'm supposed to feel. Like, I'm not an idiot. I know how I'm supposed to feel, but that the score is what heightens your emotion in the movie. Because whenever I played football in high school, it was never as intense as the highlights that I watched before the game because it's different. Like it's just when you add music, it heightens everything.
Yeah.
Like I want that heightened emotion. And when you don't have a score, it does not heighten my emotion. It doesn't mean it's not good, but and not that you can have the absence of sound and it works really, really, really well. But then you want to bring in the sound, you want to bring in the score, and I want to hear it because I want to have that emotion.
Yeah. And there is a score in Gladiator 2.
Yes.
From the opening credits, when it said whoever did, I can't remember who did it. When it said whoever did it and it wasn't Hans Zimmer, I went, oh no. But then I thought, hey, let's give this guy a chance. Like, this is, you know, this guy could do something. Who knows? And it's not that there's not a score. It's just that it's just so forgettable. There are no melodies that stand out. The only melodies that stand out, as you said, are the Hans Zimmer melodies.
Yeah.
And every time one of those melodies shows up, you go, oh yeah, just do that. More of that, please.
But
we've got this new guy who wants to do his score. And obviously it's its own movie that should have its own themes, but boy, it would have been nice if Hans Zimmer could have given us a second Gladiator score. And I don't know what he was busy doing that he couldn't do that for us, but
I know I would really like to know. I don't know. Yeah, Harry Gregson Williams is his name.
Mm-hmm.
He has done some good ones, but it's also just like Yeah, it was. I'm very sorry. It was not Hans Zimmer. It was not even close to what Hans Zimmer did. I mean, every song in Gladiator is memorable.
Yeah.
And in this song, I'm sorry, I can't repeat any of the score.
No.
Maybe I need to watch it again, but honestly, like after my first viewing, after my first viewing of Gladiator, I knew the songs.
Yep.
I love the songs. After this viewing, I'm kind of like, well, they ended with Now We Are Free.
Yep.
And that's from the first one. So I can sing that song, but that's about
it. And a great movie score has different themes for all of its different characters too. Yeah. So when someone shows up, you go, oh, this is this person's music. Yes. Oh, this is Maximus's music. Or that I think Hans Zimmer is sort of the John Williams of our generation.
Yeah.
We obviously got to watch John Williams movies growing up, and he's still obviously doing stuff, but they work in that same vein where the music that they make feels so directly connected to the story that you can't imagine a story without it.
And, oh yeah.
And every character, every aspect of the movie has its own particular part of that soundtrack, particular theme that comes up. You know, even we did Forrest Gump, and Alan Silvestri's good at this, at giving like Jenny and Forrest their own unique sound and giving different characters their own unique themes. And there are no discernible themes in this score.
No, and a trend lately is like, oh, the score shouldn't really be heard, or it shouldn't really stand out. And I completely disagree.
Yeah.
Because exactly what you just said, the great composers for films are the ones that have those themes that you can remember. Like John Williams themes are very, you can sing them, right? Like you can give the tune, like Indiana Jones, Star Wars, we can all hum those tunes. Now, Hans Zimmer isn't as, sometimes you can't really sing his songs, but everything has a theme. Like I know how Batman sounds.
Yep.
It as clearly as like Indiana Jones, but he has a theme.
I know how the Joker sounds. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
And like you can do it. It's not as, you can't sing it as well as like John Williams, but that's not a critique. That his themes are there. Mm-hmm. It's same thing like Ludwig Göransson. He has those now, and
Michael Giacchino.
He has them. He's awesome.
His score in the Batman is so killer.
Oh yeah,
it's so good.
It's really good. Those are the composers, and Up for Giacchino.
Yeah,
you know, I'm sorry.
There
you go. Up, and then I was thinking of Inside Out, but even still, those ones are great. Those are the great composers. Please do that. Like those are the songs that integrate with the movie and then become a character in and of themselves.
But listen,
to drive the characters where they are. But
listen, you're right about the music. Absolutely. But this thing that you said, where you said, I didn't love the movie, but I was entertained by it. I saw somebody say this online. Somebody was like, y'all are thinking too much about movies these days. This movie had murder monkeys and sharks in the Colosseum. Just have fun. And I was like, look, I get it. I get that the movie is built around these big action set pieces, much like the first one is. And that a lot of the movie is just have a good time. It's a big sword and sandal historical epic, and just try to have a good time. But the difference is the movie in 2000 isn't just a framework to house these really exciting action set pieces. It's a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
It's a great movie with great characters and a great story. It's a simple story.
Yes.
That's the problem. This second movie, it's just like, it's not hey, this is everything that drives me nuts about sequels in Hollywood, especially legacy sequels, is overcomplicating the things, adding too many characters, adding too many plot twists and turns, and just muddying the waters of what worked in the. It's so interesting because they simultaneously do all of these ham-fisted nods to the first film. And this is in every legacy sequel that I've seen this year, in Twisters and Beetlejuice and in all of them. These like ham-fisted lines where you go like, would that person say that just then? Or is it just the movie looking at the audience and being like, you know the line?
Yeah,
you remember that line? And it's like, it was a great line in the first movie. Here it feels like this movie is trying to make up for the fact that this screenplay is not as good. But it's so weird because these movies simultaneously do all these ham-fisted nods to the first movie, but then they abandon all of the things about those screenplays that made them work. Primarily their simplicity.
Yeah.
That it's just like we talked about this with Twister, that Twisters and Twister, that Twister is just like, Bill Paxton's got to get Helen Hunt to sign these divorce papers, and they used to chase storms together, and they get caught up chasing a series of tornadoes while he's trying to get her to sign the divorce papers. Yeah. And that's the plot of the movie. And yeah. that's it. And Twisters has way too many different people do with different motivations, and they're trying to up the ante by being like, and there's going to be five times as many Twisters in this movie. And it's like, just keep it simple.
Yeah.
And
this, yeah.
Yeah.
This movie, spoiler warning, we're going to spoil Gladiator 2. So
yeah.
If you haven't seen it yet, please. Yeah. Just know that we're going to spoil it now. Yeah. This movie, the funniest thing about this movie is that you could have made this movie better, but you would have taken out the best part, which What's is Denzel part? Watching, which is oh, Denzel sure. Washington. Cause I felt like I loved watching him, but his whole aspect, or you just make that more of the movie.
Like, exactly.
I don't be one or the other, but
I don't think you need to take him out. I think the movie just needs to decide who its villain is sooner yes. and yes. commit to that
yeah.
because this movie changes its mind about who the villain is in the movie, like, yeah. like 10 times. And it could be a thing where the movie is intentionally trying to do a misdirect, and that Denzel Washington's character has been secretly pulling the levers in the shadows the entire time. And we didn't see it. And yeah. that could be something. That's not how this movie feels like it delivers it. It no. feels like they just in the last hour of the movie decide like, well, everybody else is dead, so I guess he's the main villain now. And it's yeah. like, cool. His character is just a guy. He's basically no different than Proximo or anyone else in the movie. Like he yeah. is a victim of Rome's cruelty who has decided he wants to use politics to exact his revenge on Rome. And that's no different than Lucius or anybody like Pedro Pascal is a victim of Rome's cruelty and yeah. you know, Rome's corruption. Lucius is a victim of Rome's cruelty and Rome's corruption, and they all have their own little vendettas against the power yeah. structure of Rome. And there's no reason why Denzel Washington's character should be any more evil than any of them, except the movie in the last act is just like, he's going to be our bad guy. And it's like, yeah. oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Whereas in Gladiator, and here's the thing about Gladiator is kind of famously, this movie did not have a completed screenplay when they started filming. When they right. started filming the first Gladiator movie, they had a screenplay that neither Russell Crowe or Ridley Scott really loved. And they brought in two different writers to do rewrites while they were filming the movie. And also Ridley Scott and Russell Crowe would regularly on set just come up with new lines. And as yep. would Joaquin Phoenix, they would just go, cool, I get what we're trying to accomplish in this scene. What if I said this instead? Richard Harris did it too. He improvised the line, your deficiencies as a son are just my failures as a father. Like all yeah. of these really classic lines. And kind of famously, it was a movie that was sort of cobbled together by people who saw what it could be. But,
yeah.
but and many of the best lines in the film were things that were come up with that day on set. And I think that it's kind of a miracle of a movie that it works out as well as it does, because yeah. it's usually when you make a movie that way, that's not a good formula for success. But this movie feels like they're definitely doing the screenplay that was given to them by whoever wrote it.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a very good screenplay. Like it's got a lot of really groany lines, like
it lines that,
like, oh my goodness. Like you gotta be kidding me.
Yeah. It was not great. It wasn't great.
It's and it wasn't
just like you said, yeah. like it's just not Gladiator is so simple, and it's fine that it is simple, because yep. when you make a movie that has a revenge premise, if you do it well, it doesn't matter that it's simple. And that's what they did right. with Gladiator. Like it was very straightforward, very simple. This is much more convoluted. Especially with Lucius, what he like, I mean, I know what he wants, but then it changes in the third act.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, his reconciliation with his mom was like, wait, why do you love her again now? Like what happened that where you're like, oh, I love you now. Like, even though I hated you before. And so a lot of it was unearned.
I could hear Ryan George just saying like, because that's what I have written down here. Like, it just it, like, why do they do that? Oh, because that's what it says they do in the movie, you know, or because the movie's not over yet. So, you know, like the screen pitch guy, because characters were literally just changing their motivations by saying, like, now I think this. They would just like announce it. They'd be like, you know what? Now I'm this. And it'd be like, okay. And now they're that. And it would just, and none of it felt like the movie did anything to earn those beat shifts, or it just was like, so much on the nose dialogue. And when someone says, just sit back and enjoy it. There's sharks in the Colosseum. There's murder monkeys. Paul Mescal bites a monkey. Have fun. I'm like, but that's not what Gladiator is. Gladiator is not a movie that's just telling me to turn my brain off and have fun. Gladiator is a great movie with great characters and great acting and also great action set pieces.
Yeah.
But very Gladiator simple. Very simple linear plot in Gladiator. Really clear who our villain is. Really clear what's happened to our protagonist and why he wants the things that he wants and what he wants. His goals are really clear and they stay kind of true the entire film.
Yeah.
And they do. This movie, in between trying to make nods to the first movie and let the audience know, like, hey, remember the first movie? And also trying to be its own thing and be kind of Shakespearean and all of these double crosses and characters concealing motivations. It just, by the end of the film, I was like, I don't get what makes Lucius different from Denzel Washington's character, or like, why is he better? I don't get.
Yeah, you know? I actually I really like Denzel Washington, and his motivations actually seemed pretty understandable. So, like, the fact that they made him the one that we're supposed to not like, the thing about the ending of Gladiator is it's so satisfying when Commodus gets his comeuppance, you know?
Right.
Like, Joaquin Phoenix gets killed. Like, that is extremely satisfying. When Lucius kills Denzel Washington, I was like, oh, should I feel happy? Like, I didn't really feel like satisfied. Like, I understand that he enslaved Paul Mescal, but like, Proximo did that to Maximus and Maximus loved Proximo. Like, it's like, it just doesn't, I was set up to think that Denzel was going to be Proximo, which was fine, but I ended up, you know, he ended up being the bad guy. So I was like, it was a little strange. The ending did not work well.
The fact that they not just like one of the bad guys in the movie, like the movie was like, no, he is our main villain. And it's like, I don't think that you've done enough to earn that movie. I don't think that you've done enough by the end of the film to make me satisfied when Paul Mescal kills what's his name? Macrimus?
Yeah, Macrimus, I think is
Macrimus. Macrame. Okay, so so we'll be obviously spoiling the plot. We'll just kind of break it down here. The movie starts very similarly to the way the first one starts, with a big battle sequence, and we're introduced to our protagonist, whose name is Hano or something.
And
it's Paul Mescal, and it's, you know, similar to the first movie. He's working in his field. He's a farmer and he has a wife, and pretty much immediately we're like, okay, she's dead.
That's the first thing I thought.
She's
gone.
Yep. And you just know it, you know, like, it's just like, oh, well, she's dead. And there's this battle happening. Rome is coming to conquer their city. It's one of the last free cities in Africa. And Paul Mescal is kind of a general in this city, it seems like. And he and his wife fight for the army. I kind of liked this sequence of them putting their armor on together. I thought that was an interesting idea of, like, people at this time, it just being a part of their lives that everybody needs to be prepared to fight. And I thought that was kind of interesting. They do this whole opening battle sequence, which had some interesting imagery, stuff that made me think of, like, the Lord of the Rings, the two towers with these giant towers that come off of the Roman ships. And I thought, you know, Pedro Pascal is leading this army. By the way, Pedro Pascal is so wasted in this movie.
It is funny. He's
such a nothing character.
This is the interesting thing, because, like, Denzel Washington is singing his praises. Mm-hmm. I love Pedro Pascal. I think he's a great actor. I found his character and that whole storyline to be very, very interesting. The fact that Paul Mescal wants to kill him,
mm-hmm.
and then he ends up being married to his mother, so mm-hmm. he's technically his stepdad, but then he ultimately has to face him in the Colosseum and decide whether or not he wants to kill him. I was like, that's really, really cool, because that sets up a really interesting, you know, dilemma for him to do. He wants to kill this guy. He wants to kill Pedro Pascal, but Pedro Pascal was just doing what he was supposed to try and earn his own freedom. Like it, but they never used it. Just like you said, it was kind of wasted.
Totally.
That was the midpoint rather than the climax. And I was like, that should have been the climax.
Keep your movie simpler.
Yes.
This is, I mean, very similar to like Batman versus Superman. Where it's like, simplify.
Yes.
Because also, we have a very similar thing that happens in this movie too, where Paul Mescal just kind of decides he doesn't want to kill Pedro Pascal anymore while they're in the throes of battle. And it feels like a big shift in his character that does not feel like it's earned enough by this mediocre screenplay. And you're right. That's a very interesting story that it's similar to the first movie. Pedro Pascal is responsible for Paul Mescal's wife dying. So this battle at the beginning of the movie, they lose it. Obviously, Paul Mescal's wife dies. Pedro Pascal orders archers to shoot her. This felt very ham-fisted that it was like, this one archer in particular, he orders
Kill
her instead of, it just was, it's like the movie's trying so hard to be like, and now we have the motivation that Paul Mescal needs to want, where it's like, he could just be like, you're the general that's responsible for my wife being dead. It doesn't need, this screenplay does so many things that bother me, but he gets sold into slavery, bought by Denzel Washington. He sees, that's the general that, if Denzel Washington can help me, I'd like to kill that guy who killed my wife. And then he finds out this man is married to my mother. That complicates things. And also he finds out this man didn't kill my wife because he's evil. He killed my wife because he's also a victim of Rome's corruption and cruelty. And he had a job to do. And he isn't happy about it. And if there could be some way to just focus your movie on developing that storyline, but it's just sort of like a B plot. It's just like, it's one of the storylines that's happening in this very convoluted film. And, you know, going back to Batman versus Superman, it's like this similar thing happens where in the midpoint, Batman and Superman are fighting, and, you know, famously Batman decides not to fight Superman anymore because he finds out their mom's the same first name. But it's like, get rid of the entire third act of Batman versus Superman with Doomsday and just make the movie about this conflict between Batman and Superman. That is more than enough to sustain your movie. It's two of the biggest fictional characters in cinema history on screen together for the first time. Simplify it.
Yeah.
Just make it about their conflict. And we've got a great setup here that, like, you know, Bruce Wayne witnessed what happened at the end of Man of Steel. He witnessed an entire city getting leveled by this guy.
Yeah.
He's got a great motivation for wanting to oppose him.
Yeah.
And having Lex Luthor in there playing chess, I think, is fine, but we got to get rid of the whole third act and just make it about these two. And similarly here, it's like, we've got too many people, these dopey twin emperors that the movie just does not know what to do with them. It's just like, they're bad and they're kind of crazy. And by the way, in the third act, one of them has syphilis that spread to his brain. And not only is he bad, he's like, his brain is like gone.
He appoints a monkey as the second seat or whatever it is. Yeah.
And it's like, hey, that's an interesting thing. And if the movie wants to do that, wants to be like, one of the emperors has syphilis that has spread to his brain, tell us that earlier in the film so that we can do something with that. It's just something that the movie just sort of like introduces in the 11th hour. It's like, oh, by the way, he's got syphilis brain.
And it's right. It's like, he says, he's like, oh yeah, I'm afraid his infection has gone to his brain or whatever. And it's like, and then Denzel Washington goes to the other brother, and then they come back and they kill the other brother. I was like, why did you just say that? Like, why didn't you put that early on? Like, there's something wrong. I mean, we could tell there's something wrong with him. So why didn't you set it up? Yeah. Like, I don't know. Yeah. The emperors in this one, first of all, I really like all the stuff that Joseph Quinn has been doing. He plays Emperor Geeta.
Joseph Smith is doing, or Joseph Quinn, sorry, Joseph Smith.
You're still thinking about Heretic there.
Heretic. Joseph Quinn is doing everything he can to give a performance here.
Yeah.
He's just not, the character just isn't.
Yes.
The character just doesn't have anything to do.
He gives it something. Mm-hmm. Like every time he's on, I'm like, wow, this is really interesting. But then it's like, okay, he dies. He gets killed. And yep. he's not really anything.
I think they killed the wrong brother.
I did too. Yeah. I thought that was very interesting. Okay, so these two are actually real, like they're like Commodus. They were real people.
Yeah.
Geeta and Caracalla. Caracalla, yeah, or whatever. They were two brothers who were the emperors at the same time. They did not get along, and then one killed the other.
Yeah.
But it was obviously done very differently. But they you know, so they're using history, and like, I don't know. I just don't know if, I mean, they don't really play much of a part in the movie according to, you know, Paul Mescal, like his character, like, so, and it does play way more into Denzel Washington because he's trying to do whatever he can to take over the throne. But I don't know. I don't know if they were really needed. You could have had just one emperor that Denzel Washington is trying to manipulate. But also again, like, I don't know. They also didn't really need it.
Yeah. So Paul Mescal, he obviously sold into slavery after his wife dies and his home is conquered, and he gets bought by Denzel Washington because he fights some murder monkeys in a, you know, Roman province in a gladiator match, similar to how Maximus is, you know, bought and found by Proximo. And this is, you know, it's a fine action sequence, and it's fine. You know,
I do want to ask this. How did you feel like the camera work was? Because this was not really shaky cam.
It was cleaner. It was easier to follow than the first movie, but there's still staging things in this movie that I was like, that was weird. And not in the fight sequences, several moments in this movie, there are things that happen geographically where I'm like, why did you stage it like that? There's a moment where Connie Nielsen goes and visits her son in slave prison. And they have a fight, and he tells her to get out. He says, you know, leave. And she leaves, and she walks out in a huff. And the next shot is her walking into her house, almost like she's the same path that she was walking.
Right.
And it feels like she walked into the next room. And it feels like the next room is like her house. But it's like, obviously her house is on the other side of town. But the way that it's staged in the movie makes it seem like she walks out of wherever Paul Mescal is right into her living room with Pedro Pascal. And I just don't know why Ridley Scott chose to stage it that way, because it feels it's confusing. It's like, it took me a minute to be like, okay, this is a different scene now. But they do it again in the third act when everything's going down. Denzel Washington, like, you know, he kills the other brother and he leaves the Colosseum and jumps on a horse. Paul Mescal's in the middle of the Colosseum with his mother on a platform, and that he's surrounded by people fighting. And then he's just like out of the Colosseum on a horse following Denzel Washington. And I was like,
yeah, it was super weird.
I was like, how did that happen? How did and another moment, Denzel Washington, when he's conspiring with the brothers. So he's talking to one of the brothers, and he goes, I will go counsel with him. You know, the syphilis brain brother leaves the room, and Denzel Washington says, I will counsel him. And he walks out, and it looks like he goes into the next room, and the camera just makes it look like Denzel Washington leaves that room and walks into the next room.
Yeah.
And then he's talking to the other brother about how we should kill your other brother, but he's talking very loudly. And so I was sitting there going, are they in a different part of the palace? Because the way the scene was staged made it seem like he just stepped into the next room.
Yeah.
But no, he must be in like a completely other area of the castle. Otherwise, he wouldn't be talking so loudly about this, you know, subterfuge.
It was weird going back to the shaky cam, or going back to the camera work. It was definitely less shaky.
Yeah.
But I did feel like sometimes when they would punch or when they would swing, they'd swing high and the person would go low, and it was a little more apparent that they were swinging high to miss the person rather than trying to swing and make it look. That was a little critique I had, not saying that it should have been more shaky cam, but I could see the choreography a little bit more, and it wasn't as intense. So, but it, you know, it was less shaky. It was a little bit more visible. So
if you're gonna do smoother camera work during fight scenes, you need to have tighter fight choreography. You need to have like John Wick is so good because it's my friend said the other night, he goes, John Wick movies are like dance films because you're watching really well executed choreography the whole time that's shot in wide masters. And I don't know. I just like, you got to do one or the other. Use the shaky cam to hide the fact that the people are missing their swings, or tighten up the fight choreography.
I
don't know. This movie, it feels like it is rushing through all of the same beats as the first film.
Yeah.
And so that it can fit in all of the extra plot points it wants to fit in, but it's hitting all of the same beats still, but just doing them worse. Like, we've got all the stuff where Maximus sort of ingratiates himself to the other slaves and the other gladiators by, and we see this early on in the film that the men that he leads all really like him and relate to him.
Yeah.
This movie tries to do the same thing with Paul Mescal's character, where he's like the guy that everybody is like, yeah, we like Hanno, but I just don't see it in this script. I don't see it in the film. The movie's just saying that everyone's like, they all really like him. And I'm like, but why? The movie's not really giving us these moments. They even did a thing in this film where after Paul Mescal's first big fight in the Coliseum, everyone's cheering his name, Hanno, and they have no reason to know what his name is.
Yeah.
And in the first movie, they learn his name is Maximus before they start cheering Maximus. And this movie, they just all know what his name is for no reason. And
And he, Paul Mescal, I don't think he did bad.
Yeah.
But he did. He's no Russell Crowe. And Russell Crowe just, I don't know, that character. It's funny. I read this post on this video that I saw, and he's like, this guy was like, I name my dog Maximus after Maximus Decimus Meridius, leader of the Felix armies. And, you know, he does a whole thing. And the last line was, nobody's going to name their dog Lucius.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, that kind of sums it up. No one's going to name their dog Lucius. Paul Mescal did fine. Maximus was such a stronger character. And I think that it was almost like they were too worried to make him too much like Maximus, which I get, but also
he's Maximus's
like,
son. Like he is should Maximus's have, you know, son. That's the whole. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the Luciousness of it.
Yes.
So this is another thing. This screenplay really makes a meal out of the mystery of who is Paul Mescal's character.
Yeah.
The problem is, not only did they tell us in the trailer who he is, there's a scene in the trailer where he's looking at Maximus's armor and you hear his mother saying, your father was a great gladiator. And like they said, but also in all of the promo, they said they spoiled this plot point.
And I'm like,
hey, that's fine. If you are fine with us knowing that before we watch the movie that Paul Mescal is playing Lucius from the first movie, that's totally fine. But then why are you making such a big deal in your film out of this mystery of who is this character?
Yeah.
And doing so much with it when we're all sitting in the theater going, yeah, it's the kid from the, I know, like, you know,
we know that
if you wanted me to be surprised by that, then don't tell me that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. The trailer gave away a lot.
Yeah.
It gave away a lot, especially from the third act, like with Denzel Washington and everything. It was very, very interesting. I mean, it probably did pay off, but Lucius, I mean, it was weird because it was like they didn't have any reverence for it as well. Like like they were treating it as if it was a surprise, but also like it wasn't treated as a reveal. Like it's just kind of almost like he already knew that. Like you are like your father. And it's like he didn't know that Maximus was his father. Like you didn't.
Right.
Tell him that. So like, why is he like, oh, okay. Yeah. Like I knew that. Like it was treated really weird, and they could have done a better job of having it be a reveal.
I thought that the way that this screenplay had Connie Nielsen come to the realization that that's her son was ridiculous.
Yes. I agree.
As soon as he walked out onto the gladiatorial field and she saw him, she should have gone, oh my God, that's my son, Lucius.
Yes.
Like,
yes,
I don't care that it's been 15 years. You know what your son, you know your son. Like.
Yeah.
Like the fact that she had no idea who he was. And then the screenplay does this awful thing where the twin emperors are like, hey, what was that poem that guy was saying? And they start reciting the poem and she realizes, oh, that's my son.
Well, and he picks up the sand like Maximus.
I just
did.
Thought, like, give me a break. Like, she's not going to see that guy and immediately go, oh, my God, that's Lucius. Yeah. That's my son.
The way. OK. Count of Monte Cristo, the movie with Jim Caviezel. When he meets his former fiance, immediately she knows that it's him. Mm-hmm. And she goes, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm sorry, you don't know me. And when he came into in Gladiator 2, when Paul Mescal comes into the Coliseum, I thought, oh, she's going to know it's him immediately.
Of course.
She's going to go, you know, like stand up straight and be like, that's Lucius.
Right.
And she doesn't. And I was like, that's weird. That's your son.
She doesn't even look at him like, huh? She's got like a flower in her hand or something. Yeah. And she's just like playing with it. And she looks at him like nothing.
Yeah.
And maybe Connie Nielsen gave a performance where she did some kind of reaction, but the reaction shot they cut to in the edit is she's completely nonplussed by seeing this guy.
Yeah.
And not until she sees him grab the gravel the same way that Maximus did, and she hears the emperors reciting the poem that she taught him as a boy that was on his nursery growing up, that she goes, oh, that's my, and it's like, I was like, oh, come on. Like,
yeah, it was a little
I know dumb. That he's got a beard, but you wouldn't see that guy and immediately go, that looks a lot like my son, Lucius.
That would, yeah, you would know. I mean, at least in the movie, that's how she should have realized, is that she should perk up and kind of be suspicious because she doesn't want to give it away or whatever, but she should know immediately.
And so, and
you don't
and
need
also,
a poem to say that.
Right. And to our screenwriter, that's more powerful. It's more powerful for us as the audience to know who he is just because she sees it.
Yeah.
That like her face registers, that's Lucius. And if the movie didn't tell us this in the trailer, and if the movie didn't tell us this in the press, and we were just watching Gladiator 2, and then Connie Nielsen sees him walk in and she goes, and we realize, oh my gosh, is that Lucius?
Yeah.
That would be a much more powerful moment. But since we already know, and then she doesn't know, the whole thing was like, why would she not know? And then their first scene together, she goes to visit him, and it's like, he hates her. And the movie never really gives us a reason why he hates his mom. And this flashback they do, where they retcon the end of Gladiator 1, kind of pissed me off. So
yeah, me too.
We talked on our Gladiator episode about how good the ending of Gladiator is. The ending of Gladiator is, she says, he was a soldier of Rome, honor him. Everybody picks up Maximus, they carry him off, and you know, everybody walks away. This movie decides to make and Maximus says to her, Lucius is safe. This movie decides that what actually happened right after they carried Maximus off is that Lucinda and Lucius scurried away to a side door, and she immediately put Lucius on a horse and sent him away because he was not safe. And I was like, you kidding me? You're undoing the end of the first movie.
Yeah.
You're like,
why couldn't it be that they went home and a few days later, somebody tries to, you know, assassinate him or something, you know, or like kill him and take it by force. And that maybe this, you know, then a couple days later, she's like, I cannot keep you safe right now or something. Just don't ruin the ending of it did not ruin the ending for me. But the fact that you're retconning it to make it this, like, just go, you can do something else to still have that ending be completely intact.
Yeah. Cause the fact that like, Maximus sacrifices himself for his son, for his son Lucius, and looks at the mother of his son and says, Lucius is safe. And that's the end of Maximus's story. And then for this movie to tell us that, like, immediately she was like, actually, he's not at all. He's not safe. He's not safe at all. And it's like, and I don't even need to see the flashback, because it also bothers me that we've got a new kid playing young Lucius. That takes me out of it.
It
and
does,
I'm like,
yeah.
I go, I get it. I get that the kid who played Lucius is like our age now, and he could, you know, I get it, but don't show me the flashback. There can be a conversation between her and Paul Mescal where he says, like, how come you never came for me? Yeah. And she tells him what happened, that she tells him, like, maybe she got a report that he was dead. Like, she's like, they told me you were dead. Something like that, where, like, you don't need to show me a flashback. There, it can happen in a conversation where we get why he's mad. Like, hey, you sent me away, but you said you would come for me, and then you never came for me. And maybe she was told, they told me you were dead. You know, something like that. Yeah. Something or, as simple as that.
I like Connie Nelson, but, you know, maybe this siege on, you know, when he's a kid, they kill his mom, they kill her, and then he's able to get away, and then he's mad at the people who killed his mom, right? I mean, that's probably too much like the original one, but still, it makes more sense.
I think that's better. And I like Connie Nielsen in this, but I like her in Gladiator 1. I think in this movie, she feels like she's here just because she's one of the only people from the original movie that one of the main characters that survives. So it's her and Gracchus that are still in this movie.
Yeah.
And Gracchus, to me, I was like, is he okay? Because that guy's got to be like 96, 97 years
old.
Like,
I know.
He seemed very shaky in the film. I was like, should he be here?
Yeah. And he's not in it for very long. And then he totally gets killed off. And I was man, that sucks.
So. Yeah. And I think that you're right that between films, they could say, Senator Gracchus was assassinated. Connie Nielsen's character was assassinated. Lucius had to flee for his life. Like and that's why he's mad at Rome. But the fact that like he is a prince of Rome and his mother just sent him away for safekeeping, and that he just grows up and is like, I hate my mom and I hate Rome and I hate everyone. And it's like, that's not, I don't think that's strong enough. I don't think that, you know,
I think having, you know, it's kind of the catharsis of it. Having his mom be the you could have Connie Nielsen, well, you could have her in the movie still, you'd have to de-age her, but I mean his relationship with his mom was something that was extremely precious to him, right? So if you have that she gets killed, and then you have flashbacks of how much she taught him and how much she did for him, like that would go into it a little bit more, right? That would go into him wanting revenge, like you said, against Rome, who has not treated him very well. So
absolutely, this movie gives us a scene between Connie Nielsen and Paul Mescal where seems like he hates her. He tells her, whatever kid you sent away, that kid doesn't exist anymore. He's dead. And he screams at her, leave, get out of here. The only next scene they get together is he's just all is forgiven. And he tells her, like, I can't bear losing you again. I could never. And I'm like, you know, I just think that, again, it's the screenplay just having a character be like, I'm different now. And it happens after Pedro Pascal dies. But again, that's a whole moment where it's like the whole movie, Paul Mescal's motivation has been, I need to get in the ring with that general so I can avenge my wife. He finally gets in the ring with that general. And all it takes is for that guy to be like, hey, I'm married to your mom and I really like her, man. Come on. And just like be like, hey, dude, if I had been your stepdad, I would have thrown the football with you. And like, he's just like, you know what?
Yeah.
You're right. I love you. And like, it just happens so quickly.
Yeah.
And he goes from homicidal rage toward this man to just like, you know what? Actually, you married my mom. That's cool.
You're a pretty like, cool guy.
Yeah. And I just like get there a different way with the screenplay.
Yeah. There had to be a different way. Again, like maybe if they could have kept Denzel's character as interesting, but make the main plot be about him and Pedro Pascal.
Yeah.
You know, making that the decision like, okay, do I kill Pedro Pascal or do I give mercy to him? Because he's just doing what Rome did to me, you know, like that you could still kind of have both of them, because I would rather have not had, I don't mind Denzel wanting revenge on Rome, but the fact that he turns out to be the bad guy is what I do mind. Because again, I'm like, I like this character and I see his motivation for why he wanted to do what he wanted to do. So I'm not cheering in the end when he gets killed by Paul Mescal. Like it's not satisfying to me.
A better film. So I at our midpoint in this movie after Pedro Pascal dies, that's when Denzel Washington really starts putting his pieces in motion.
Yes.
And he helps one of the twin emperors kill the other one. And then he becomes kind of the leader of Rome by de facto because the other, you know, the first consort is a monkey and the emperor has syphilis in his brain. But here's the rewrite is just get to that way faster. Just have the moment that they arrive in Rome, show that Denzel Washington's character sees the weakness of those two twin emperors, sees that one of them has a brain that doesn't work. And the other one is just like this kind of pushover guy, and immediately but before the first act is over, have Denzel Washington off both of those guys and take over as the leader of Rome. And now you've got him as you can do stuff with him in that position where he can become this movie's enemy. He can become like, you know, he can go from the Proximo character to the usurper of the Roman throne, which is what he becomes, but he becomes that way too late in the movie's runtime to do anything with it.
Yeah.
You know?
And again, it's too late for me to be like, oh yeah, you better kill Denzel.
Right.
Like, I just didn't, because I love how he manipulates. Again, I mean, Denzel Washington is just this amazing actor. So everything that he does, and I really like when he chooses to be a villain, because he doesn't do it very often. And he does it really well in this one. Mm-hmm. But again, he's not enough that like I hate him and want him to die. Like, you could have almost had it to where like he's trying to do this, trying to usurp the emperors and all that. But then Paul Mescal is the one who kind of puts a stop to it. But you still don't have to have him be the bad guy that we all cheer at when he gets murdered. Like, because it just doesn't work. It just
How about this? This is a cool concept, because these twin emperor characters, this screenplay just doesn't know what it wants to do with them. They're obviously corrupt and they're bad, and they're like, and the screenplay also does this thing that kind of bothers me where like every queer coded character is bad, and there's this historical conspiracy theory that the fall of Rome was caused by an embrace of like sexual perversion and queerness. And I was like, okay, I hate that that's a big part of this movie, because even Denzel Washington's character is sexually fluid, and everybody that's fluid, everybody that's bisexual is bad. And very I was like, whatever. But this movie doesn't know what it wants to do with these. It's not a bad concept, these twin emperors that are like really deranged and crazy. But like a cool way to undercut the because if we go into the movie thinking they're going to be our main villains, these like evil emperors. Somehow we undercut that earlier in the film. We have the scene where Paul Mescal, while they're doing the battle sequence in the Colosseum with the ships and the sharks, where he gets a hold of a crossbow and he tries to shoot Pedro Pascal with it.
And he
shoots it between the two emperors. I say have that arrow go straight through Joseph Quinn's head.
That'd be pretty cool.
And Paul Mescal inadvertently kills one of the emperors and takes care of a big part of Denzel Washington's plot for him. So he's like, okay, well, but now there's still an emperor left, but it's an emperor that's much more easy for Denzel Washington to manipulate. And so establish in the screenplay that one of these brothers has brain syphilis and is basically useless, and the other brother is the one that's harder for establish that better, make that clearer, and then have Paul Mescal straight up kill one of the emperors in a gladiator fight, and then Denzel has to decide what to do with this person who
how does he manipulate that situation?
How does he deal with that?
That would be interesting. I think that's that's really, but none of that happened.
Yeah.
And we got what we got. Now,
how do you feel about this, the ships and the Colosseum scene, this battle sequence with the sharks and the,
you know, I actually really love the rhino sequence.
I like the rhino sequence. Yeah.
I thought, and I've seen like, they did have rhinos in the Colosseum. They never actually had anybody ride the rhino. But I, you know, this is not historically accurate, but I thought it looked really, really cool. And I liked that fight. It was very entertaining. The ships in the Colosseum, I also thought looked really, really cool. And I thought it was really entertaining. It wasn't as exciting as I thought it was going to be. So it was a little bit not as entertaining as like the rhino fight. But I thought it was pretty cool. You know, I thought they could have I mean, the movie was a little bit slow, and I thought they could have spent a little bit more time making those sequences a little more heightened.
So I thought, hey, if nothing else, movie, at least make these scenes cool. And yeah. I was shocked at how not that entertaining they managed to make ships in the Colosseum and sharks in the water. They managed to make that like pretty just like fine to watch. It was like, okay. Yeah. And I was like, that's kind of amazing that you managed to make that not more thrilling or tense. And then my friend Colin pointed out that the sharks were like sci-fi channel sharks that were just like, they're the kind of sharks that just anytime a body hit the water, they were just swimming to it and eating immediately. It.
Yeah.
And yeah, obviously sometimes there's blood coming out of the bodies that attracts the sharks, but sometimes a person with no wound would just like hit the water and sharks would just start devouring them like piranhas. And I'm like, yeah, that's not what sharks do.
Yeah.
That's not how sharks work. But this movie literally had these like, sci-fi channel Sharknado sharks that were just
like, they had bloodlust for human blood.
And I just was like, okay, sure. And
I could forgive that if the movie was great. And it really, I mean, it didn't really bother me. I was kind of like, all right, just add some interesting part to it. But yeah, it, I mean, that's not how sharks work. That's, you know.
Yeah, I just, again, I think I'm with you that if the screenplay had been better and this was just like a really heightened, crazy, over-the-top action sequence, I would have been like, oh, that's fun. Again, the person that's like, have fun, it's sharks in the Colosseum. But I'm like, make the action sequence better and make the movie better. And then I can sit back and have fun. Yeah. But I can't have fun if the movie is doing all of these really frustrating things with the screenplay that I'm just like I genuinely by the third act of the film was like, I don't know how to feel about any of the characters in this movie. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't, everyone's motivations now are so muddied and unclear. Yeah. And the movie just tells me by the end that Denzel is our main villain and Paul Mescal is the main hero. Yeah. And it just has characters sort of act accordingly, even down to the plot to escape that Paul Mescal just gives a ring to a guy and says, hey, go give this to a general and say that the Prince of Rome gave this to you. And this guy just rides up, gives this guy a ring and says, hey, Maximus Decimus Meridius, his son, Lucius, who's the grandson of Marcus Aurelius, gave me this ring and he wants you to march against Rome. And the guy's like, say less. He's just like, he's like, I'm there. And it's like, no.
You had me at this ring.
Yeah, just like, no questions asked. We're in. It was like,
well, and then the two armies come together. This final fight was really unearned and also not that interesting. Him and Denzel Washington have a fight. They fall in the water and Denzel Washington keeps stabbing him, but it doesn't go through his chest plate because it was Maximus's.
Yeah.
I don't really know why. I guess it's cut the water or whatever, but, then Paul Mescal ends up getting the sword away from him and he cuts off Denzel's arm and then chops open his stomach. And then he kills Denzel. And then he has this speech to both sides of the room. And he's like, there once was a dream of Rome. And he talks about, you know, the whole thing.
Well, first he starts off by going like, you're all expecting me to say something, aren't you? And then he's like, well, I'm not really a man of words, but then he gives like a 10-minute speech that's also like, but I was sitting there during that whole sequence going, how do either of these armies know who either of these guys are? Like Denzel Washington just became, I'm talking minutes, just became a de facto leader of Rome. And like the day before was appointed as like the main consort to the emperor. Yep. How does anybody in this army know who that is? And then on the other side of the army or the other army, either of these armies should not know who Paul Mescal is.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But both armies are watching them as though like, hey, whatever happens between these two guys, those are our leaders. And it's like, there is no reason for them to know who either of those guys are. And then when Paul Mescal kills Denzel Washington and gives his speech, everyone on both sides should be like, who is this?
Who are you?
hey, sorry. What's going on? Like, are we fighting each other or not?
I've been in the back. Who are you?
Sorry, I can't hear. I'm And just are
it
we
really like, yeah well there's and the even the fact that they are all the everyone cheers
yeah
when Paul Mescal gives his speech and they're all like yeah like let's make Rome better again great again you know and it was like okay but what why like yeah. it was really
also,
that was really weird.
My favorite edit in this scene, did you see this, is Paul Mescal says like let's not waste our energy like spilling each other's blood yeah. on this battlefield, and one of the guys holding a flag like looks at the other guys and he starts to put his flag down like he's the look on his face is like yeah. should I put this down
yeah.
I was like again like the yeah. fact that some random guy is like, hey guys, let's not fight today. And one of the bannermen is like, I guess we're not fighting. And yeah. it's like nobody knows who this is. And he's just yeah. like, hey, let's not fight. And they're like, I don't know. I just sort of take orders. Like, who are you?
Yeah.
There's interesting concepts here that I just think yes. are so fumbled. I think the concept yeah. of seeing Rome in active revolt is interesting. Like the people of Rome are like really revolting in the third act of this movie.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that the movie does enough with that. And these are interesting concepts that I'm like, you can do something with this, with like the people of Rome rising up again. Again, if you don't know what to do with these twin emperors, maybe it's that. Maybe they are overcome by the mob and the mob kills both of them. I don't know. It just feels like the movie's like, we got these twin emperors that are really weird and we're not sure. What to do.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. We're talking a lot about the negative of this movie, which there was a lot. I think my scores are a little bit more generous because, again, Denzel Washington, there are a lot of flaws with this movie, as we just talked about. But Denzel Washington, every time he was on screen, I loved watching him. Like I was always entertained and I was like, this is really, like you said, there's a lot of really interesting concepts. They don't really pay off, but, and they could have paid off a whole lot better, but there's a lot of really cool stuff. Like the battle sequences are very fun. All of them are very fun. Denzel Washington is great. Paul Mescal is good. He's not perfect. He's not Russell Crowe, but he carries the movie well enough.
I think all of the actors are doing everything they can with the material they're given. And I just don't think that they have very good material, but
yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. They're working with what they've got.
But
there are some good parts. Like there were some fun things, but again, like I'm comparing it to the first one, and the first one is just, you know, it's such an amazing movie that this is fine.
Stupid sequel stuff, like the one guy going, well, you know, what we do in life echoes in eternity, and Lucius going, I feel like I know those words, and him being like, I can't claim them, they're over the grave. And it's like, give me a break. Like, he said that before a battle in Germania at the beginning of the movie. Why would it be over his gladiator tomb? Like, why wouldn't just like strength and honor be over his gladiator, you know? The movie's just trying so hard to ham-fist these references in. I just think that everything about this movie that doesn't work is it begins and ends with the screenplay, and it's a lot of it. It's just like a sloppily written, you know, everything that's bad about legacy sequels is here for me. Let's get into our scores. So technical rating, what did you give Gladiator 2 on a technical score of just like how well the film is crafted and made at the technical level?
Yeah, I gave it a 6.5. I think maybe I should do. It's like the visual effects were actually really, really good in this one when they show Rome. You know, in the first one, it's really, really blue. And this one, they made it. It just feels a little more real, a little more.
It's tangible. An improvement.
It is. Just, yeah.
You can see that the visual effects have stepped up for sure.
Yes. Yeah. And not to say that Gladiator was bad, but this one I don't know. The visual effects are great.
The sci-fi sharks maybe could have been a little.
Yeah. Better. Yeah. 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 But, you know, no, I guess 6.5 is appropriate because I didn't love the score.
Yeah.
The screenplay had a ton of problems, maybe even lower, maybe 6. But, you know, I mean, so many other things, the costumes, the battle sequences, a lot of the acting was really, really good. They're, like we said, they're doing the best they can with what they have. 6.5. What'd you give it?
I gave it a 6. So technically, That's the only thing I could really latch into the entire time watching this movie was production design.
Yeah.
And the actors doing everything they could, mm-hmm. but that's it. And it, for me, really, I didn't even really particularly enjoy the action sequences. I thought they were kind of just fine and not good enough to make up for the massive problems in this screenplay and kind of some of the weird directorial choices even from Ridley Scott. Yeah. And so I just was like, this movie gets as high of a score as it does because visual effects were really on point for the most part. The production design is incredible. The detail in the world building is fantastic. And I've got to give it up for the art department for this movie, for the costumes. But boy, Hans Zimmer in the score. We missed that score. Yes, and so even six feels high, but it's all for just there's a lot on screen here. Very big. It's very epic, but I just wish that it had a screenplay that could serve it better.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about the ending of this film?
The ending was the weakest part. I gave it a 4 because I feel like 5 would be like, it was okay, but it's below average. You know, it's below middle. Cause the ending was really pretty sloppy. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't satisfying like Gladiator was. So 4. What'd you give it?
I gave it a 2. I literally was like, I just was like, this movie had no idea what it was doing and had a third act that told me that a character I'd been following the whole movie was the villain. And I was like, hey, if he's going to be the villain of the movie, you got to just let me know that he's the villain. Just let me know that and structure your movie in that way where that's clear, because this last fight has no payoff. It makes no sense to me logically why these armies would be watching these two men fight. I just thought as good as we talked about Gladiator, and as good of an ending as Gladiator has, well as they stick the landing, this movie just felt like such a mess in its final act. It just felt like whatever was there was rapidly falling apart, just like Rome itself in the movie. Rome seems to be unfurling and falling apart in the final act of this movie, and the movie seems to be falling apart. And I just felt like it didn't really land anywhere satisfying at all. So,
yeah. Well, rewatchability, what did you give it?
I gave it a 3 because like maybe I just missed stuff. I'm like, okay, I could come back to it to be like, maybe I just on the first watch, I just wasn't seeing it and maybe I missed it. But I don't know if I rewatch Gladiator 2, it'll probably be once and then never again. And I'll probably just stick with Gladiator and pretend that this movie doesn't exist, to be honest.
Okay. I gave it a 6.
Yeah.
It could be, you know, the visuals of watching it, you know, but it's not something I'm going to watch as much as I did Gladiator.
Yeah. How about cultural impact and relevance?
Cultural impact. I mean, it is doing really well, especially for a rated R movie. I gave it a 7. We'll see. And I had, you know, I really would like to know what some younger people feel like, because I was sitting next to two younger kids. I don't know. They're probably like 18 or 16 or 17 or whatever. They seemed to be totally into it. And I was like, well, if you love this, you should watch Gladiator. But it could be it's more of a generational thing. So I put 7. It'll be very interesting. I almost should put a question mark because I really don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
Well, I'm seeing that based on most aggregators online, we are in the minority. Most people seem to be really liking this movie. So it might have a better, bigger cultural impact than I think. But also I don't think this movie is going to have the staying power that Gladiator had. I don't think it will either. I think the biggest cultural impact this film's going to have is bringing a new generation of viewers to Gladiator. I think that all of the kids that like this movie are probably going to go watch Gladiator if they haven't already and see that it's a much better film. I hope they see that.
I hope so too.
I really wanted to like this movie and I just didn't.
Yeah.
And I gave it a 5 on the cultural scale. Okay. Subjective, what did you give it?
Subjective, I gave it a 7. And that's mainly because Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
I'm singing his praises a lot, but he was really interesting to watch. He's obviously an amazing actor. unfortunately, the end wasn't great, but it had enough in there that I felt like seven is a pretty, you know, is pretty solid. Maybe yep. It could be a little bit lower, but you know, yeah.
The longer I think about this movie, the more I talk about this movie, the more I'm just like, I'm so let down by it. Because I think that it's no secret at this point of us doing the show that I don't like legacy sequels that are just made.
You really don't.
There's just tropes that they do that get under my skin that bother me that I think are really corny. Yeah. And I was really hoping this movie could stand on its own two legs and be its own thing and be like a really strong new. And all the reviews were making me go, okay, cool, this might really be something.
Yeah.
And I just kind of, I really was rooting for this film in the theater, and I just found it to be like, I think it's just kind of bad. I think it's just like, that's, you know, yeah.
All your points are very valid. And, you know, funny thing in reading in the reviews that I have read, like they're pretty much kind of how I feel like, yeah, there's a lot wrong, but there's some interesting stuff, but it's not anywhere near as good as Gladiator, like the first one. So that seems to be like, it's positive, but it's almost like deceptively positive because they're acknowledging the many, many faults that are still in the movie.
I give it all to the art department. I think that everybody's watching a movie that's that beautifully made on that end and going, this can't be bad. You can't say that a movie that looks this good and has this good of costumes and this good of like production design is bad, right? Like they're doing a lot. And it's like, yeah, I get it. But like that screenplay is just, it's letting everybody down. It's just, and the lack of Hans Zimmer's music. And it's just like, this is coming after a fantastic movie, and I don't think that it's even half the movie that the first one is. So
I think that's valid.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. What'd you think? Are you a big Gladiator 2 fan? Am I wrong? And is it closer to a 7 or an 8? Or let us know what you think, and we'll see you at the next one. We're into the hot season. This is when all the best movies come out. So we'll we'll see what's coming out down the stretch.
Yeah.
All right, and we'll see you at the next one. Comment, like, share, subscribe, all those things. Bye-bye.